Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
Still love Jason Anderson today. Don't hold us against it. Hold it against us, especially not right now, because we got a special guest in studio. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Dylan Michaels on the other side of the glass, and Myron Medcalf is in the building. Myron, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, man. Did Jason decide that because I was coming to town, he didn't want to? He didn't want to be in the studio?
I was afraid to tell him last night. I was like, "Hey, Myron's in town. He's actually going to come on through." I was afraid that he would just be bursting through the wall like the Kool-Aid Man. If he's listening right now, he may text us and be like, "Guys, why didn't you say anything?" Jason, I wanted to respect your couple of days off, and I just had a special little treat thrown at us with you being in town. So thanks for being in studio and surveying the palace with us here.
Hey, man, it's cool to be here, man. I just happened to be staying like 5 minutes away. So when you texted, I was like, you know, wait a minute, I could actually go in studio.
Yeah.
This time, and then I put it on GPS, and I'm like, it's literally down the street.
It's
from
just
where
right
I'm
here.
Staying,
so. When you texted, you're in town. I was like, hey, listen, you know, Lawrence is a drive. I wouldn't want you to drive 45 minutes down to do 30 and then drive 40. You know, if you're in Overland Park, you might as well. You might as well come on through.
Meant to be.
Yeah. As always, Myron Medcalf's appearances with us here on the Zone are benefiting Jackson County. CASA, C-A-S-A, is court-appointed special advocates, community volunteers just like you who stand up and speak out to help children who have experienced abuse or neglect. They recruit, train, and support those volunteers to advocate for the best interests of children who are in the Jackson County family court system, so they have a safe place and a permanent home. You can check it out online at Jackson County CASA. That's CASA-MO.org, Jackson County, CASA-MO.org. What's the trip been like so far for you, Myron? You've already made your way up to Lawrence and got Bill Self to get in on the court storming. Did you try to get to the hardwood at any point? Has the security been beefed up at all yet?
No. Okay. No, it hasn't changed yet. I mean, the biggest thing for me was the trip was kind of planned, assuming Kevin McCullough was going to be available.
Sure.
So obviously, you know, things kind of change in real time. So it's just been interesting to see the team change, kind of what's ahead, who has to step up. But anytime you come to Allen Fieldhouse, you come to Allen Fieldhouse. Man, I feel lucky that I get to come to like this bucket list place where there's so many people who are Kansas fans who've never been in the building. And here I am back. I don't know, fourth or fifth. I don't know how many times I've been there, but it's pretty cool.
Losing count is a cool thing to be able to do. I was kind of doing that earlier before we were talking. I was like, I've been, I don't know how many times. The seats never get more comfortable, but the atmosphere never gets less cool. That's the trade-off that you can always have. What's the best, like, food road trip for you? Like, when you do hit one of these frequent stops, when you're like, that's the trip that I've got, like, a food plan for.
Kansas City.
Thank you. I don't know.
You let me into that. I mean, because of the barbecue joints. Now, the problem with Kansas City barbecue is you all have local rankings that the outsiders don't understand. Right?
Okay, sure.
So, like, from the outside, we know a couple of places, you know, whether it's Gates or Arthur Bryan's, places like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come talk to people locally, and they're like, hold on. I got 18 other places that nobody's ever heard of. I'm like, hold on, man. I'm trying to get to, like, the three main places.
Yes.
That people tell me I should go to, and then you all break out this AP Top 25 poll or
that's
whatever
what it
you're
is,
taking,
though.
A barbecue. What do I do with that?
You got it. You hit Mount Rushmore. You get your big three, big four, whatever, and all of that. And then your advanced courses are, all right, what's the top 25? Let's go ahead and start checking some of these off.
Your blue bloods.
Exactly.
Blue bloods.
That's a good way to take. But you all need a better list.
Okay.
Right? You all need.
I'll work on it.
You all need an outsider's list. Like, okay, tourists coming into town. I have one day. I can hit up one or two places. Give me those rankings.
Right.
And then you need your local rankings of, okay, I got a little more time.
Going to be here for a week or two, something like that.
Yeah, I
want
to go to a couple other places because you all got to have a meeting and make a decision on what sort of barbecue recommendations you're going to offer to outsiders.
I will try to send some texts.
Please
I will
do.
Try to assemble a board or something. And we can try to clarify that for you. I'm going to save the court storming that made you Good Morning America famous. I'm going to leave that for a minute.
8 seconds.
I think you had it at 11.
Yeah,
I think count double digits.
Yeah.
More than 10, less than a dozen. That's all pretty good.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Kevin McCullough and how that has been like such a total unknown. unknown and such a shakeup to this Kansas season, a shakeup to your plans at one point. Yeah. Did you learn anything about his status yesterday talking to Bill Self, and what's that mean to you right now?
Well, I think the biggest thing he said is, like, he's not just going to bring him back in the postseason.
Yeah.
You know, so it sounds like if we don't see Kevin in the next week and a half, then that's probably the last we've seen of him, you know, because and it makes sense. Like, you wouldn't want to bring him back and he's not ready to go in terms of what he can offer the team. But you're also talking about a guy who is suddenly a projected first round pick in the NBA draft with a bone bruise. So I think there's a lot of that. And I asked Bill, I said, you know, you've obviously dealt with late season injuries, star players. I brought up Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I'm not. Calm down. Everybody
right,
calm down.
Right.
I'm not saying Kevin McCullough is Embiid.
Right? I didn't hear you say that.
All right. Everybody relax. But just in the timing, and Bill said, no, it's different because that team had more depth. Hmm. And the challenge with this team is you don't have the same rotation that he's had in past years where Kevin like has to be out there in order for his team to reach its ceiling. And it's not as easy to do the next man up thing with a team like this.
What is their ceiling if he doesn't come back or doesn't come back in a major role, even if it is a little bit of feeling it out in the postseason?
Well, you know, I think they're trying to figure that out now. But stomping on Texas was a big moment. I mean, defensively.
Right.
You know, I obviously putting up big numbers, we know they can score. But defensively, I thought that was impressive. Going on the road and kind of exercising the demons, if you will, of getting a game on the road against a good Big 12 team, I think that helped. So I think they can be a team that kind of spreads the ball around. Listen, Johnny Furphy suddenly is a projected first-round pick, which, by the way, if I hated Kansas, right, if I were a college basketball fan and I hated Kansas, I would hate them even more.
Yes.
If they could bring a 6'9" Australian that nobody's ever heard of,
that's, yes,
and a month later he's a lottery pick. What are you talking about? Where did he come from? Who is this dude? And now you bring some 6'9" kid off the bench, and he's about to be a Golden State Warrior in 4 months? What are we doing, man? So if I were that person, I would look at this Kansas team and be like, you know what? I don't even want to hear it because you are building a factory somewhere in Lawrence,
yes,
where you're producing these guys. So I think Furphy, though, his development has been a huge part of what you think their ceiling can become because he just changes the way they play. He changes the matchups. Like, there aren't many teams that are built to deal with that. But Kevin is their best player. I think that's clear. But they also got more talent than a lot of teams, even without
him. I'm feeling pretty good as, like, a ball knower now because I can just go ahead and cross off future Golden State Warrior Johnny Furphy
100%.
And everything leading in that. I mean, you're dead on. You are so, so right.
He is already getting donuts for Klay Thompson and Steph Curry.
Yes. Like, already so annoying in the third quarter at some 100%. Point. Like, all right, they got bench guys out here. We got a chance to come back and get – who's this Australian
exactly.
kid?
Exactly. They already trash-talking him, messing up his name
because
he just went 3-for-6 from the corner and nobody guarded him. Right?
Yes, he sounded really. But his whole arc is so funny to me because it was like, I mean, I don't know how long into the season it was. We were talking, our football season keeps going later and later around here, and I'm not complaining.
No.
But at some point, further into the year than it should have been, I was saying to the guys, like, I am still not sure that Johnny Furphy is a real name for a real person.
Yeah,
it sounds messed up. It's like, all right, like, so this is like your creative player,
exactly.
Something generated.
Yes.
Who's the 6'9 Australian kid that nobody, like, really, that development is fascinating to me. And it's not, is this just what, does Kansas just do this now? Like, is there just always going to be a guy? Yeah, give him a few months and then all of a sudden he's going to be a lottery pick because he can shoot.
Yeah, it's local versus national perspective, right?
Yeah.
And they're always different. Locally, for you all, this is a situation where you're like, whoa, we don't have as much depth. You know what I mean? Maybe not as much talent. So now you go to a guy like this and it's like, okay, he's good. But it's not some of the top elite guys we've had, the depth we've had in the past. Nationally, it's like, wait a minute. You just lost your best player, and you're still a really good team because you have guys like that. It's like somebody being broke, and then they go to somebody's house who's really broke.
Yes.
And you sit, and like, you're sitting on the floor.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
With the lawn chair in the house,
like,
yeah.
TV dinners.
Uh-huh.
They got antennas on the TV. And you're like, you know what? I thought I was broke. But there are levels to broke.
Yes.
Right? And there are levels to being challenged in college basketball. Losing Kevin McCullough, big deal. But because of what Johnny's been able to do, I mean, Timberlake steps up. You got a Towson transfer coming out of nowhere, dunking on people. Alley-oop. So I just think this team has to change. The ceiling question comes to me in that second weekend conversation. Can you compete with the best teams in America without Kevin McCullough? But getting to that point, they're equipped to do that.
And then once you get there,
I
don't know, man. Yeah, I don't know. Shrug. Like, we'll see what actually arrives. My dear friend Nate Taylor, a year or two ago, started talking about Tuscaloosa Chiefs fans because we were getting into that headspace.
Yeah,
we have Tuscaloosa Chiefs fans. We have Tuscaloosa KU fans. Yeah. This is suddenly this little pocket of America has, and I mean this in love and graciousness, the most spoiled brat fan bases in the world. And I'm not apologizing for it because it really, this Kansas season has felt in so many ways like this Chiefs season did throughout the regular season of, well, this guy didn't step up, or injuries over here, something's not quite meshing the way that it should. Yeah. And the rest of the league's looking around like, well, you're going to be a two seed. You're going to be fine. It kind of feels like KU's in a similar spot.
Yeah, it's like talking to a kid who, you know, maybe falling on hard times, he thinks, and it's like, we're not going to the Bahamas this spring break. We're only going to Disneyland. Shut up, man.
I hate my mom.
We've never been to Disneyland. What are you talking about? Like, that's how it sounds sometimes when you've been so good for so long. You all have been celebrating, it feels like, for a decade.
Yep.
Super Bowls and World Series and national championships. And then you come to the table with normal people, and you're like, well, wait a minute. Where are your rings at? Where are your NBA prospects? You don't have three Super Bowls?
What?
How come your guy isn't as good as Patrick Mahomes? So, like, you all got to change your circles a little bit and who you talk to. Because if you talk to regular sports fans, they're not really going to know how to relate to what you all have going here.
This is why my Phoenix Suns fandom keeps me grounded. Even that in recent years, I've started getting greedy. I can feel it. I'm like, well, listen, what do you mean you lost? You mean you lost in the finals? I don't.
Exactly.
Like, I hadn't seen a finals in my lifetime. But that's, you know, that I do think, I think Chiefs fans still, at least most over the age of like 15, have some memory of like the bad times, you know? KU fans don't. There are KU fans who are born and lived full lives who still are like, well, no, I mean, Big 12 championships are kind of our birthright at this point. Also, the rest of this Big 12 is, Dylan just waved. KU fan Dylan was like, yep, that's up.
It's unfair when you have a fan base that can be like, Embiid might have been our fourth best center ever.
Right.
Like, what? What do you mean he's number four?
Like, we get annoyed by the Allen Fieldhouse record versus, not annoyed, but it's like, I've seen that stat 1,000 times. So.
Like, hold on a second. How is he number four?
Like, it's finally just gotten to where it's more losses than championships for me in my life.
It's amazing.
It's incredible, man. And look, the Big 12 being as good wild as it's been this year, if in terms of like what you've learned about your team come tournament time, you've got all the information in the world. You just lose more games. Like, what, zooming away from KU specifically a little bit, also shout out to the overtime Wildcats. I can't explain it. Okay, I figured. I just want to make sure.
I don't know if it's
sure.
a stat or not. I mean, I like, from a media perspective, it's cool for us, but I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's real or not.
What is it? Exactly. What is it?
Something.
What does it mean? All right, hold on. We're holding off the rest of the Big 12.
Yeah.
What is there anything? Because like I was talking about clutch after the Super Bowl and everything, because like Mahomes has something, but I think he's just a great player who's totally unfazed in those moments, so like great stuff happens. But I don't know when a like up and down struggling Big 12 team is untouchable in overtime. I don't know if that's the sorcery again of Jerome Tang or if there's something else happening, but it's so bizarre to me.
It's bizarre, and now like you wonder if you're an opposing team. At this point, everyone tells you it's not a thing, right? Come on. There's no real number on overtime. You can't really project that. But now on the court, you go into overtime with a team that doesn't lose in overtime. That could be an edge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just a really weird stat, but it's also the thing that's kept them alive in the NCAA tournament picture.
That's true, I guess. Whatever it is, if it keeps showing up, then I'm happy to see it. But removing the state of Kansas from the Big 12 and putting all that back into context, obviously you've seen the we'll get kind of top three, Houston, Purdue, UConn. Obviously Houston has had a great run, but this conference, how do you put it in like a historical perspective at this point in terms of what this Big 12 has been?
I think playing in this league will be harder than winning the championship just because of the talent you have. I mean, you're not going to see Iowa State in the second round. You're not going to see a Kansas State team that can't wait to kick your tail every year in the first round. So, I mean, if you're talking about the path to the championship in this league, it's more difficult than what you're going to see in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And by the way, hello, Arizona. We'll see you next year.
Like, come on in, I guess.
It is. It's going to be interesting to see how they, like, create those Kansas matchups too late.
Yeah.
Because we got to see Arizona KU twice. And you'd hope we still see Houston, Kansas twice. But if I'm Kansas, I'm like, hold on a second. I got to play those two teams.
That's great for you guys to watch, but you got to play it. Yeah.
But I mean, I think it is the most powerful league in the country, and you're seeing that. I mean, you have multiple teams that I think can make a run. I think this Houston team is as good as anybody in the country. Healthy Kansas, we've seen what they've been able to do with their non-conference win. So, again, I think the path to a championship, if you told me to pick what's more difficult, winning the Big 12 championship is going to be more difficult than winning an NCAA championship.
What, as a terminology basis, what's a tournament run to you? Is that a Sweet 16? Is that getting to the 8? Where would you put, like, a run? I don't know. It's
depends on the team, right?
That's true. Yeah. Because maybe it's just getting past your seeding, like where you're supposed to reach or whatever.
Well, I mean,
history.
I mean, if you're Kansas, it ain't the first round.
No,
second
right.
Round, you know,
right.
Probably Elite Eight-ish, you know, I would assume. Final Four. If you're Kansas State, getting to the second round, I mean, I would give Jerome Tang a lifetime contract, right?
Right.
It varies. But I think there are multiple teams that are capable of getting to the second weekend. And to your point earlier, who knows what happens if you get there?
What would you put the number at in terms of, we'll make it second weekend of Big 12 teams right now that you're, no, that would make, wouldn't surprise me at all to see this team playing in the second weekend.
I mean, six? I mean, five? Six, it's not unrealistic. Like, you put Baylor in any other league in America with what they're able to do, one of the best shooting teams in America. Defensively, they struggle, but there are a bunch of imbalanced teams in college basketball right now who are struggling defensively. You've got two first-round picks on that team. You got a veteran in Ray J. Dennis who is a really good player. Put them in the Big Ten, and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Put them in the SEC. Like, put them in the Pac-12, and let's see what happens. Their problem is they're the toughest league in America. But if you tell me they get to play everybody else, and you don't have to run through Kansas and Houston and all the teams they're facing, things might be different. So I just think you're going to see a lot of teams that out of the Big 12 are going to be a lot better potentially once they get to the postseason.
And, I mean, your level of competition is lower than it was in the regular season.
100%.
What are you working with less? Like you've had a donut on your bat all season. Maybe that bat speed picks up. I don't know.
Yeah.
Last thing on KU, I think. Then before we kind of go bigger picture, they play BYU tonight.
Yeah.
You can hear it right here on your home for the Jayhawks, Sports Radio 810 WHB, coverage starting at 5:30. How much can home wins without Kevin McCuller mean for KU at this point? How meaningful can these be?
Every win's going to matter, right? I mean, because the way that they're playing now, and this is how Bill was talking. I think Bill Self is hoping that there's a way Kevin McCuller comes back. But I think he's coaching as if he won't come back. So I think winning with this new group is going to be important because everybody has new roles. You know, can Nick Timberlake do it again? Can Furphy continue to emerge and evolve? Can you get guys to start to play in a way that they haven't had to play most of the year because they had Kevin. So I think a win against a good BYU team, shoots a lot of threes, has a different kind of style, will help you going forward because you have to go into this game and every game beyond this saying, you know, this might be our team. We don't know if Kevin's coming back. So every victory is going to matter because it's almost like they're starting over in a weird way if he can't come back.
Speaking of things that may or may not be real, obviously getting that road win in Oklahoma, like we talked about, felt like, I don't know if it's just getting the monkey off their back or clearing their head or whatever, but ending that streak felt meaningful at the time because it was so inexplicable. But I also don't know if that's real. I don't know if it's Allen Fieldhouse or if it's road environments, what happens in the tournament, what happens in the T-Mobile Center.
Yeah.
Is there a way for you to calibrate to how much that actually is a part of this KU team story?
It's just hard, man, because some of those variables, it's hard to know like what the actual factor is and like what is actually like. Again, media talk, we love the streaks and records and broken. It's fun for us because that's a story to talk about. But you know what? No one ever asks us like what exactly does it mean? Like you brought up Jerome Tang, the overtime champions. Okay, tell me how that happens. I don't know. There's no metric to say this is exactly why it happens. I do think, obviously, at Allen Fieldhouse, there's a mystique.
Yeah.
That I don't know. Are there four buildings maybe in college basketball to have a mystique? Cameron Indoor, Rupp Arena, I guess. You know, maybe there's another one I'm missing. But, you know, there is something about being a part of this building. It's just hard to say that's exactly the reason.
Yeah, it's weird, and also some of that weird inexplicable stuff is, I think, some of the best parts of college basketball, because there are so many teams, so many factors, so wild. With that in mind, it feels like there's a real cutoff at Houston, Purdue, UConn. How do you view those three right now? And is this a situation where, come tournament time, you're going to say, give me the big three versus the field, or I'll take the field in chaos?
I'm probably picking the chaos. I mean, UConn, I think, is the best team among those three, just because of, you know, when Donovan Klingon is playing well and he's back healthy, there's a really tough team to beat. I don't know what happened at Creighton. That was a weird game for them.
Yeah.
That got away from them. Purdue has the best player in America. And when you talk to coaches about Zach Edey, there's just no way to solve him. He's better than he was last year. He's a lottery pick now. He's more mobile. He's lost weight. So that's a real challenge when you got a 7'4" monster who can now move even better than he could a year ago. Houston's clearly the best defensive team. You know, like, they just make you look really bad, and they make your offense look ugly. Like, even if it's flowing, they got a bunch of grown men. Like, I like to say, like, they got a team with a bunch of dudes with 401ks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, those some grown men. You know what I mean? Like, so that is the difference with Houston. So it could be almost a pick your poison. I think, and I know we see this all the time, the matchups are going to matter a lot this year. The path to the championship will matter a lot this year, because I don't think we have a great team. UConn, Purdue, Houston are as close as we have, but I don't think they're great compared to past years. They're really good, and there's a bunch of good teams behind them.
Which I also, again, think, in my opinion, I think probably good for college basketball.
Yeah.
It's nice to have some blue bloods and some names, 100%. You know, some favorites, but then let it rip come March, and that's kind of where it thrives.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the story of the week that I'm sure you are not tired of talking about in any way whatsoever. From ESPN to GMA, Kyle Filipowski's hit by a fan. Several fans, he kind of tried to throw a little shove at one point, which I get, because you're being stormed by a whole bunch of fans. The entire story to this point, I imagine people are largely caught up with.
Yeah.
You talked to Bill Self about it yesterday.
Yeah.
What was that conversation like, and what was his posture on the whole deal?
Well, he wants it banned, and I get it. You know, he brought up a couple of instances that I think people maybe forget. Iowa State 2012, when they stormed the floor after beating Kansas, he had to pull Darren George, who was a ref, who broke his arm in a court stern. You know, and Bill Self had to, like, pull him to safety. And then the Jamari Traylor thing. And the thing he said, which is the thing I've always thought about Jamari Traylor at Kansas State in 2015, he said he was shocked that Jamari didn't throw a punch. And I am too. Like, the thing that people aren't talking about is, okay, say what you want about Kyle Filipowski. If you think that was exaggerated, whatever. What happens if Kyle swings on somebody? I always tell people, man, I tell my kids this. Everybody was not raised the same way. What you think may happen might be different than what actually happens. And there are people in this world, if a bunch of people are rushing at them, that triggers a certain response where they're like, hold on, man, I'm in danger.
Yeah.
Now some college basketball kid who's 6'9" throws a punch, some kid gets decked on national TV, and all of a sudden we want to have a different conversation.
Tenor changes a lot.
Or I was just at a game, you know, the other day. There's an elderly person in the front row who's not mobile, and everyone spills onto the court, and someone gets hurt. A kid falls down on the court, and there's a stampede. Have we not watched enough of European soccer, international soccer? So I think it's disingenuous for people to say it's not a big issue, it's not a big deal, when in reality it's clearly a safety concern. Here's the other challenge in the court storming conversation. If you don't go to North Carolina, Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, and maybe I'm missing another school, shut your doggone mouth, because this is not a conversation for you.
That's a good point.
We listen to Bill Self because this has happened to him maybe more times than anybody else.
That's right.
I'll listen to Cal at Kentucky about this. I'll listen to Coach K when he was coaching about this, because those are the schools that are most vulnerable to court storming. If somebody has stormed on your team one time in 10 years, be quiet. Nobody cares what you think about court storming. If you know your team is never going to be good enough to be the victim of a court storming, also be quiet. So it's really a conversation for four or five schools who are always vulnerable and in danger, and people are going, it's no big deal, because they're not a part of that. But for Bill Self, I'm going to listen to him, because he's been in the middle of it a ton. And if he's saying stop it, we got to end it. It's that simple.
And one thing that's you tweeted somebody about this, about being like, wow, they're going to hold all those fans back or whatever.
Yeah.
The weird thing to me is that space of being like, it'd be great if we could stop, but I just can't think of any reason why. I'm also, I'm not sure I'm on full team, let everyone storm the court and then
that?
Just round them up again, you know?
Yeah,
and I don't know where that lands, but like, what is feasible to you, having talked to those guys? What makes sense? What's an actual way that this can... And I'm also... If it is a actual security and safety concern, which we have plenty of evidence that it is, I understand, I guess, people like the scene. It feels like college sports, but especially on basketball courts. I mean, maybe it's even different than in football. You got a lot more grass to cover. The attachment to it doesn't quite meet the level of concern that comes with what happens when there's an incident. So I don't know. What do you think is feasible, and why is this going to be so difficult to convince the world of that maybe there's something, some changes that need to be happening here?
Well, I'm not on team jail.
That's right.
I don't need Officer Johnson and his colleagues at a game 25 deep, and they don't want to be there.
No.
Trying to arrest some kid.
Drop a net
on the
from above the Jumbotron, maybe. Yeah, just get everybody.
What are you doing, man? I don't think we need to go to that level. Like, I would like to focus on other things.
Prevention,
maybe.
Citations. Yeah.
But I really think it starts, like, with the expectation. I was just watching a high school game yesterday out in Pennsylvania. Kid hits a last-second shot, wins the game. Everyone's going wild. And guess what? Some kids were trying to storm the court. And all the security are like, nope.
Not
back. And they didn't do it. I hate this idea that people are saying we can't prevent it. Hold on a second. When I go to an NFL game, I expect you all to keep me safe.
Yeah.
When I go to an airport, I expect people to keep me safe. And guess what happens? 99.999% of the time, people are safe.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know why? Because there are expectations and measures in place. So I just think that has to come to college basketball. There has to be an expectation from everybody involved to say, we're not doing this. Jerome Tang has told his team, listen, we're not going to storm the floor if we beat this team anymore. It's not what we do. So the idea that we can't prevent it is ridiculous when we've watched multiple schools prevent it. Wake Forest didn't look like they had any plan in place. Those kids were almost at half court before the final buzzer, and that was the fastest court storm I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And again, if people haven't been in a court storm, I've been in multiple court storms as a reporter. If you're not somebody who knows how to stay upright, maintain your composure in a moment like that, again, everybody ain't raised the same way. Somebody's going to take a swing at some kid. And then it's going to be a whole different conversation about the 6'8" kid who's bullying Junior from Philosophy 101.
Yes.
Well, we got to decide if Junior should be on the court in those moments.
I think that's absolutely right. Is there a similar fabric of, I don't know if it's nostalgia or just the whole college experience? What is it that also compels people to get very offended when some people, not to name names or point fingers, suggest that maybe the handshake line should also be optional to maybe avoid these post-game interactions?
To me, tradition's cool. Yeah. I just think we need to take a more of a cue from the pros who don't have these issues that we have. Like, an NFL game is wild with far more fans than a college basketball game. And no one goes to a Chiefs game and goes, uh-oh, we might storm the field.
We're storming the field if we win this thing.
Or if Kansas City went to Green Bay and you thought that a bunch of Packers fans were going to storm the field and surround Patrick Mahomes, could you imagine Mahomes in the middle of a bunch of Green Bay Packers and they're bumping him potentially, or he gets bumped on the knee? Everybody's talking about Kyle Filipowski. Imagine that scene on a Sunday night. Patrick Mahomes is in the middle of a field storm and some Packers fan bumps him in the knee and he limps off the field. There would be... Kansas City, you all would be at the Wisconsin border.
100%.
Ready to seize the city of
Green Bay.
Torches
and pitchforks.
Over that, right?
Yes.
So, like, let's stop pretending that it's not an issue.
Yeah.
But I also think, let's also agree that there are a lot of emotions in a game. These are young men, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. It's not as easy for them to just turn it off.
Yeah.
There are a lot of emotional people in the stands, same age range. Let's give everybody a break. And just keep some distance in those moments. I want kids to be able to celebrate, court storm all you want, but make sure the opposing team and players and coaches are in a safe place.
Feels eminently reasonable to me. We don't have a lot of time left, but there was one thing that I really wanted to make sure I asked you because I saw you tweet about it last week. Should I be watching Love is Blind?
Oh, my goodness.
I don't
Are
really,
you not?
I'm not. I don't really. I haven't really watched any reality dating show kind of stuff, but I'm open. My heart is open for one, and your passion for this is really enticing.
How much time do you have? I don't want to go on a Love is Blind rant.
Just, we have all the time in the world for Love is Blind.
Love is Blind, if this season, okay, the guys are bad. Like, the guys are all terrible. You know what I mean? Yeah. The whole concept is like you don't see the other person.
Right.
You fall in love with their personality, who they are, their character, and then you see them, right? And you can tell all these guys can't turn that off. All the women are like, yeah, I like him for who he is as a person. I'm excited to start my life with him. And then the dudes are just terrible, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that is what it's come down to. I am very disappointed in most of the dudes on the show and just the way they've switched up now that they're in the house together.
Oh, they're in a house together. Okay. Well, they originally were like in like their own little like cubicle things.
Yeah,
is that the show? Okay.
They're on opposite sides of a wall.
Got it.
Can't see each other.
Got it.
But then when they propose to someone, you know, they become engaged and then they move in together.
Okay.
But the guys in the house are just doing a lot of really wild stuff. And then if you follow, there's a Love is Blind kind of subgroup.
This is my bleep
media.
Here. Yes. Okay.
So everybody goes and digs in on social media to really figure out who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of these dudes are in relationships already. There's a woman who made a TikTok, and she's like, oh, wow, how did I find out that my boyfriend was on Love is Blind? Like, so there's a lot of scandalous stuff. Apologies to the women on Love is Blind, because they're all great. They're all amazing. And the show just shows how terrible some of these dudes are, man.
Is that a consistent thread throughout the entire series? Or this season's been really a special performance?
No, they're trying to be terrible.
Okay.
I feel like, and it's a lot of fake dudes.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of fraudulent dudes. Past seasons have been really good. Now, maybe I'll be proven wrong when the new episodes come out tomorrow.
Okay.
But right now, I'm like 0-5. I don't think anybody should marry these dudes.
Good.
At the altar. All the women should say no.
I don't. Spoilers for previous seasons. Has there ever been a mass declining of just everybody walks out and says.
That's drama. Drama.
Okay.
Watch the past season. I'm telling you, you'll get hooked.
What season should I start at the top?
Start at one.
All right.
Start at one.
If I, as I mentioned to you earlier, this isn't like, I don't want to keep doing this throughout the show, but this, I'm in my last week here at 8:10, so I'm going to have a little more free time, you know, in March and everything. So if I just start texting you just all hours of the evening throughout the month of March, Myron, I've been watching Love is Blind, and I need to talk about it.
I will be there for you, because trust me, I'm ready to talk about it all.
Okay. That, I have something to look forward to. Myron, thank you so much for swinging by. Enjoy being out in the field house tonight. And thanks for being a weekly presence with us here throughout basketball season.
No, thanks for having me.
It's Myron Metcalf of ESPN. Again, his appearances with us here benefit Jackson County CASA. Check him out online at Jackson County CASA, CASA, jacksoncountycasa-mo.org for more on the great work that they do. We'll take a break here in the zone. We'll come back and talk about a different reality show with less excitement and less expertise, because Myron's going to head out. But so we'll come back and roll on with more Zone next. I guess I'm going to start watching Love is Blind. I don't think Renee's watched it. I should find out. She watched, I think, both seasons of F-Boy Island. And then I found out that one of the F-Boy Island contestants is from Kansas City and followed me on Twitter. That was cool.
Wow.
I don't think you made it very far.
You made it now.
But that to me, I was like, Renee, you remember this guy? And she was like, no, I don't really. I was like, oh, okay, well. That's my closest brush with reality dating shows. I just never watched The Bachelor or any of those other ones. And some of the gimmicks kind of seem interesting and some don't. And I so deeply trust Myron's perspective and his endorsement of that.
And to be honest, his description almost is so bad, it's like a train wreck where I might actually go watch this because it's so bad.
We have, you know, the reality show. This is, holy bleep, this is narrow casting. Renee, if you're not listening, this is for no one. The show.
It should be good. All right.
She's not. She's working. The show that we have been watching is kind of like a second screen kind of background thing. When like we both have, you know, our handheld gaming devices because we're grown up millennials. And that was me growing up in a big way. It was her less so, but I introduced her to Stardew Valley. And now our relationship has never been brighter. We can both play our own video games on separate couches while half watching one thing on TV. It's beautiful. That to me, so far, that's marriage. And
been great. It's really a good way of spending your, like, you know, three power down hours at the end of the day. But Renee has had, we watched one season of this a while back, but she's rediscovered Face Off, not the movie, but the sci-fi TV show, where they have these, like, prosthetic and makeup artists. It's more than that. They're doing more full head moldings and cowls and the full costumes and all of that. And they create from scratch these original characters every week, different prompts and stuff. I guess they're not always completely original characters. Sometimes it's, here's your version of the Beast from Beauty and the Beast or whatever. And that's been the only reality show I think I have watched in a very long time, despite the fact that I watched so much Survivor. My family watched Survivor and Amazing Race. I watched, like, seasons of Survivor on YouTube with a friend of mine. We would just, like, watch them simultaneously and, like, Skype or whatever. So I just think I've had a little bit of a reality TV-sized hole in my heart that Love is Blind will fill. But if you find Face Off, a show that is, I think, the most recent series, most recent season, I think, is 10 years old, it is a very specific, very weird type of reality TV that's like sort of art competition. Not that it's definitely art. It's like an art competition slash time management kind of creation. It's been very fun, but sometimes the long throws to break and the cliffhangers of, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get it out of the mold. I'm going to have clay still stuck in the mold at the end of this. And if I don't, my whole costume is ruined. And then, you know, after the break, everything went fine. And it's going to be awesome. Some of those 10-year-old cliffhangers don't quite hit the same way in the streaming age of where it's like, and coming up next on Face Off. And then it plays like a 30-second ad on Fubo or whatever. And then it's right before the break. Here's what happened. Not great. But Love is Blind, not going to have that problem. That might be the one. Do you have a guilty pleasure reality show, Dylan, or any sort of television or
you already know. I mean, it's
anything
old
that's not
football
anything
game.
That's not old football, anything that's not America's Game or
think,
Football
man.
Life. What's the last TV show you watched that wasn't football themed?
Yeah, I got to think. That's what. This is not a spot to be put on. Right.
Did you watch Breaking Bad? Like, I don't know. Maybe you get anything. Did you watch Barney as a kid? Like, let's get a starting point. Okay. So it wasn't just football the entire time. I got to get back in the Gemstones also.
I've been told to watch that a thousand times.
Oh, dude. It is. That first season is in. If you know, I've talked to several people about this sort of phenomenon. There are a couple people that I was looking around to see if they happened to be in the hallway. If you, for good reasons, if you know the people the characters in The Righteous Gemstones are based on, I don't mean like you know who, like, whatever Joel Osteen is or whatever. But I mean, like, if some of that feels familiar to you, if you've been close to that, that show does some incredible, incredible things. I've stalled now for you, Dylan, for a TV show or ideally a reality show.
I mean, the sad thing is that the two are like The Dynasty and Quarterback, which are both football shows.
Did you finish Dynasty, or is it all out?
All out. So they do two episodes every Friday.
Okay.
And I have gone through all of them. If you hate the Patriots, you're going to be so upset with this. I am struggling with the respect I have for them still a little bit with the last episode covering Spygate, where they bring Ernie Adams in, and first thing he says about it is, I'm going to the grave with certain things. I won't be talking about this. I won't be talking about it. He's basically just like the guy they bring into the interrogation room who immediately says, I didn't kill anyone.
Anyone who's saying I killed somebody, they don't know what they're talking about. I definitely didn't kill anybody.
It's so, it just kind of taints it a little bit, especially when you remember it happened twice.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're going to cover the second time as extensively as this one because it didn't get the national press. But seeing how they described what they were doing, it's very similar. It's almost the same. They were using this most recent time, they were using a documentary as almost a front, it seemed like, in the Bengals, at least from the Bengals footage that surfaced.
Yeah.
To tape the sidelines again.
Uh-huh.
And that was the issue in this, and they just all kind of, I mean, they basically just sit there and deny it. I mean, they don't answer questions. They just go through it. They show you the tapes. The NFL destroyed the tapes because we didn't want anyone having these tapes because they're a...
Because they had sensitive information
exactly.
on them, sure.
So, it's...
It's destroying the evidence,
they don't
pull
punches.
Knowing it's real.
They show you that they're asking the questions, and then they show you if these people want to answer. Bill Belichick, Ernie Adams, and, you know, it is frustrating a little bit.
So, but I think if you hate the Patriots, you're going to be frustrated watching it.
You're going to hate them even
okay,
more.
Okay, I see. But it's still –
I had a healthy respect for what they accomplished, and it kind of took a hit, just a bit.
I was a 12-year-old who loved football jerseys. Did I have a Coles Tom Brady jersey from a garage sale or something? You're damn right I did. We were getting in uniform to go play ball in the yard. Everybody needed a jersey. And if I'm playing – actually, I just remembered this. There is a photo of me – God, this is the wild – there is a photo of me probably around age – let's put it at 12-ish – of me in a Tom Brady jersey standing in front of Matt Leinart's locker in Arizona. Kurt Warner's locker is like off to the side, but I think it was at the moment in time where Matt Leinart was the guy and Kurt Warner was the old man. And I remember that experience. We had to tour the stadium pretty shortly after it was built, I think. And that was great. I have no idea why I was wearing a Tom Brady jersey. I was a Chiefs fan at that point, and I had Arizona allegiances because my grandparents were out there and everything. But that photo is one. I think I'm wearing an Arizona State hat, a Tom Brady jersey, and I'm at the Arizona Cardinals, in the Arizona Cardinals locker room. I don't know how that happened. But Dylan, I think you said after the first couple episodes, maybe, that this was still a better experience than Man in the Arena.
Oh, God, yeah.
That continues to be true, though.
They're not pulling punches, which is why it will raise some emotions in you if you hate them or think that they cheated, because there's no real answers. It's almost more aggravating that they don't answer the questions, a la Ernie Adams saying, I'm going to the grave with certain things.
That is so fascinating. So, I mean, is there... I just will watch it at some point. But is there an implication or an explanation of how intensive the spying was or how many iterations of it there were?
You see some tapes. They kind of tell you exactly what they were doing. But they just deny that it really provided much of an advantage or that they were the only team doing this. That was the other thing, was that they kind of acted like it was
like, oh, this just happens. Yes. People are just doing this. Interesting.
Correct. So... it's good, though. They use everything. They're using the NFL Films footage of practice when Kraft goes to talk to Belichick about why Bledsoe isn't. I mean, it's.
That's awesome.
They use a lot, and I'm excited to keep watching it. It does just a little bit for me kind of bring down what the first three Super Bowls accomplished, because they were taping the sideline of the signals that were going in. And then you'd see it go right up to the clock for time, down, distance, a la the coach's tape you can find on NFL.com with a membership.
Right.
So you don't think, and they were acting like, well, you know, I can just go back on coach's tape, do all this through coach's tape. Well, then why weren't you just doing that?
Why weren't you doing that? What was the other cameras actually here for? Yes. What was this rolling for?
Exactly.
But it's been...
So they can, essentially what they can do is say, oh my gosh, those are the signals that we saw last week.
Right.
That they ran.
Let's see if they're doing the same
stuff
here.
Play.
Yeah,
and an aggravating part of the Do Your Job documentaries is the Marshawn Lynch play on the goal line.
Mm-hmm.
Ernie Adams has these cue cards. This is, you know, when they have this set out there, these are the routes that we typically see. So that's the questions I have. Just a little bit. I mean, I feel like they're valid because it's like, okay, so you're spying and you know formation, time, down and distance. They run these by your films in the past.
And it's not because of your scouting in the way that theoretically everyone else is scouting and preparing.
Correct.
Yeah. But it's been good for you, the football fan and the football nerd, and the storytelling has been good.
Correct.
But it's been damaging to your opinion of the Patriots a little bit.
Yep.
I think that's
to me, I mean,
that feels fair.
That we're the first dynasty of the 21st century without cameras.
Deal. I'll take it.
Me too.
Done. I think there's probably cameras somewhere in the building that they use for, like, some things, but, I mean, generally speaking, I'll take that.
I can't imagine Andy Reid being that way. Like,
as a guy
who's a historian of football in a different sense than Bill, I just feel like Andy, that would be more shocking than anything, because Andy feels like, I'm going to do this the right way, even if it costs me 5 NFC championships.
Yeah, that feels right. I think I would have said that about Belichick before I knew about Spygate. I don't know. But Andy Reid feels, I think your hunch on that, Dylan, is still absolutely right.
one thing that has that's making me think about another a little cross sport comp for no reason. I don't know why, but like Barry Bonds stats have been showing up on my Twitter feed more often. Maybe just baseball
night,
coming back. I don't know why.
Because PEDs was trending. I was like, well,
What's PEDs trending for?
Yeah, here we go.
Jimmy G get dinged again. The Barry Bonds of football. I have like untainted childhood memories of watching Barry Bonds and the absolute menace that he was. And now at this point, I have an extreme confidence in Barry Bonds would have been one of the greatest baseball players we've ever seen completely clean. And that doesn't mean that he doesn't get dinged for having cheated, right? That's not to 913-381-1010. Steroid guys get in the Hall of Fame.
Any other polarizing subjects?
Pete Rose, here's what I think. Being fully aware of the all of that. I'm at a point now where I don't really care. I am not fazed by Barry Bonds PEDs because it's just kind of part of the entire story, and the entire story is still incredible. I wonder if that's going to be a similar place where we land with the Patriots of, yeah, I mean, nothing's completely clean and nothing's completely untainted, and again, also would be floored if the Chiefs were, you know, filming signals on the other side. But is every team doing something that's up against the boundaries of the rules to get
Deflating
an advantage?
Footballs.
Sure, right, yes. Exactly.
That's the one I don't want to hear about it anymore. Neither. In your point, right here.
Because they beat the Colts by, like, what, 40 in that game?
Yes, the quote was they could have beat them with a beach ball.
So good, so freaking good. And all of that, I think that might just be, and I don't know, man, here, you want to get super big picture? That might be a little bit of like art from the artist stuff too, of going, man, I love this musician, but there's some problematic stuff that I'm like a little bit queasy about, or I love this director, but I don't necessarily have specific things in mind because you can fill them with whichever ones challenge you personally. 'Cause everybody's got some, right? Everybody thinks Michael Jackson made great music, and what do we do with it? Like, how do you filter all of that in a way that makes sense to you? And I think some of it is probably just accepting that everything's scuffed, like that no Lombardi trophy is completely clean. That I think it was it might have been around the COVID World Series when people were doing, or maybe just COVID championships, shortened seasons and bubbles. I think it was the NBA title,
definitely
the bubble.
NBA title, yeah.
I think it was the NBA bubble title, where people were saying like, oh, this isn't win a real ring. You know, this is fraudulent because it was in a bubble.
The Lakers are still dealing with it.
Right. And I have absolutely no qualms with that being a quote real ring whatsoever.
Everyone had to deal with the same, right? Everyone got to go home and then the Lakers were there. It's all the same circumstances.
Everyone was playing under the same circumstances, and I think there was some like SB Nation article or something like that where they literally went through painstakingly, I'll find it for next segment if it exists, I'm not just hallucinating it. Painstakingly, here's why this year's title was tainted. This year this guy got hurt. This year there was a suspension for something else. This year. You can always go back and kind of poke holes like that. And I think maybe that's just sort of the rationalization that I'm going to end up having to do on Barry Bonds to the Patriots. I mean, and the cleaner everything can be, the better. But it's also going to be people in 15 years saying it wasn't a hold, Chiefs-Eagles. Right. And us going, what the F are you talking about?
That's
it's
true.
Been 15 years. I think it's always going to be a battle in sports talk, and I'd like to opt out of most of it,
To tie a bow on basically this subject, is that if you can do that, you're going to like the documentary. It's
cool.
Great. It's very good.
And hey, if you watch the documentary and you're just a little more annoyed at the Patriots, also okay. That's also fine.
There's always room for more annoyance with that that region.
Absolutely. And you know, listen, if Mac Jones turns things around...
That's the other thing, is that ever since Brady, too, just separating him from Belichick, still, that also taints it just a little bit. A
little bit!
It's like, he probably should have maybe retired after Mac Jones to the wild card.
that could have been, he got Mac Jones to the playoffs?
Exactly.
That might have been the way. We'll take a timeout. Hopefully you don't have to compartmentalize how you feel about us here in the zone. Joshua Briscoe and Dylan Michaels with you today. We'll take a timeout. You say it's easy?
Yeah, that's easy.
You don't have to. You just love all of it.
Exactly.
We're perfect. This is a perfect show. We need to take a break, probably. I guess we probably should. Todd Lebo will be in studio with us coming up next hour, and I'm going to see if I can find that article. There's a tease for you. Hey, good news. I got something to give to you here. You like Dune? You like Dune 2? You like Dune Part 2? I can hook you up with some tickets right now if you're caller number 8 or caller number 10 to win a couple of tickets, up to 4 tickets, to Dune Part 2. The movie is this Thursday at B&B Theaters in Overland Park. You got to be there at 7:15, and then we'll handle all the tickets back here on our end. But 7:15 on Thursday at B&B Theaters in OP if you want to see Dune Part 2. Be caller number 8 or caller number 10 right now, 913-3810-810, 913-3810-810. Caller number 8. Caller number 10 to get you some tickets to go see Dune 2. You also get to talk to Dylan in the meantime. That's a pretty good deal. Todd Lebo is in the building as well. We'll spend the final hour of today's show with Lebo on the other side of this timeout. It's The Zone here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.